Good morning. My name is Nancy Mathias. I work at St. Norbert College. Today's date is Friday, April 20th. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking with J.Q. Greer, who is a senior at St. Norbert College. We're recording this interview in De Pere, Wisconsin, at St. Norbert College in the Mobile Library basement. Good morning, J.Q.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking time to talk today. I've been kind of interested in your whole pathway here at St. Norbert College for several years now. We ran into each other, I think, at a volunteer activity at the Cassandra Voss Center a couple of years ago. And I got to know you. I think you had a cast on your foot or something. And you were one of the students who was contributing a lot to the mission of the Cassandra Voss Center. And the center was pretty new at that time. I think it was just
like 2 years old.
So I was really interested in how you got interested in Cassandra Voss Center and just, your whole story here at St. Norbert College. So, tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, how did you get to St. Norbert and how did you end up at the Cassandra Voss Center?
For sure, Well, I'm from Chicago. I went to a private high school called Loyola Academy. There I participated in sports. I did well academically. And so after I graduated Loyola, I had a couple different places that I could, exceed academically and play sports. And so I thought about it with my family. All right, where would be the best place where I can go, where I can be a student athlete?
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about it, we were sifting through the college offers and, just going through the FAFSA, financial things. I just, really thought that St. Norbert was a really good place. I visited here and I, had a really good time on my visit. I got to meet my future teammates, my coaches, other students, and it really was a welcoming place. I can't instill this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really brought me to St. Norbert. I just thought St. Norbert gave me a better chance at being a well-rounded student, where student comes first, and I wouldn't go somewhere where I was just being an athlete.
Yeah, and did it live up to that? You were able to do all of that, huh?
Oh, yeah. I was able to get in the classroom, hit the books. Like many freshmen, I struggled my first year, but after that, I kind of found my footing.
So how'd you find the Cassandra Voss Center?
Well, actually, I had a friend who worked there first. At first, I was just doing, event staff, so I would, go to different sporting events and help out. And then my friend was like, well, you're a sociology major, and he was a communication major, and he was, really involved with Cassandra Voss Center. I think he was there for maybe 3 years or so. He was there for quite a while. Kalo.
Kalo, that's right.
Yeah. And so he's like, you're a sociology major. You'd have a lot to contribute to our conversations because him and I would always talk about things at home because he was my roommate. We would talk about things at home, things that maybe bothered us on campus, different issues that, we experience, that we see others experience, intersectionality, a lot of things we talked about. So I went to a couple of events at the CVC, met Anna Zarnik Niemeyer, she was wonderful, super passionate, and Carl and Carly, they were awesome. So it was almost like going to those events were my little, interview. So they knew who I was from that, and then I think I started that next semester of school year.
Wow. So then you became part of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have an idea of the language of intersectionality or of all the kind of work that Cassandra Voss Center does? Was that part of your experience prior to working at Cassandra Voss Center?
No. I just knew a little bit from what Kalo would talk about. Mm-hmm. Again, with him being a communications major, he broke things down very eloquently. So it was really good to get his perspective on it, but still some things just kind of went over my head, and
yeah.
I was like, you know what, I think I should, you know, take this opportunity to, you know, be open to grow, you know. So just thought I'd, you know, give it a shot. And then when I went there, I learned about bell hooks, glorious dynam. My first year, I was like really involved with getting a lot of people on campus, doing itineraries, and you know, I got to meet people firsthand, and that was something.
Those are such amazing people. Yeah, and that was your chance to kind of meet them up close
mm-hmm.
and personal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about kind of what it was like to work in the Cassandra Voss Center. How did it impact the way you thought, the maybe your career path? Can you tell me like how it changed your experience here at St. Norbert?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of times when we show up to campus, especially just as like, you know, I'm a student athlete,
mm-hmm.
and I show up to campus, and you know, I want to meet new people. A lot of the times, we don't know a lot about people's, you know, lives, like internally. We just know about what goes on, like at the school. And so, being at the Cassandra Voss Center, I think it helped me to meet new people in a different way. At first, I just met people because we were in track together. We were in the same classroom. And this person was really smart, so she was my tutor. He helped me do this. And, you know, that's just the gist of it, and, you know, for a while. And then when I worked at the Cassandra Voss Center, I was like, oh, this person is unique because she, you know, has this ability that I'm really, like, proud of. I'm really fond about it. I really admire this in this person because I heard that person, you know, stand up and speak at an event at the CVC, and actually I share this experience as well. So when you sit down and have dialogues like that with people, you know, you're able to introduce yourself to interesting people, and then when you introduce those people, you have more of an insight about them, like, oh, I know that person because, you know, her and I did X, Y, and Z together, instead of just saying, oh, you know, I met her through a friend, or I met him through a friend, we sat down and we had lunch together sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the staff really got to know each other.
Yeah.
Partly because of the speakers and the kind of conversations that were
mm-hmm.
happening at CVC, and also just the purpose of the CVC is, part of it is fun, right?
Yeah.
And just, tying in, like, this real deep thinking about social justice
mm-hmm.
issues
yeah.
along with building community, maybe on campus, in the center, and then with bringing the community into those conversations.
That's really important, especially, like, building community. That's why being at the CVC was super important, and you get to know people personally, because a lot of times when you get to campus, especially if you're a minority, you might look at this campus and go, oh, wow, it's predominantly white here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me, I never really said that about this school. I never tried to, like, you know, it's hard because it's predominantly white. Well, I look at that and I go, well, I chose to go here. I can either sit back and say, you know, I don't like this school because there's, you know, a lot of white people on this campus and no one here looks like me. Or I can say, you know what, I want to be involved in something that, you know, I can help make a difference. I can help change something on campus. And so by being at the CVC, I was able to sit down and get to know people, like, personally, so that I wouldn't come to conclusions about everyone that I meet. Like, oh, I met that person. Of course, that person doesn't say hi to me on campus because, you know, they really don't like, you know, or they not even say like, but they, you know, are uncomfortable with being around minorities. But at the CVC, a lot of people were open to talk, and you get to listen to other people. So now when I go out on campus, I feel more comfortable because I know that there are people here that are thinking about social justice, thinking about these issues, and it helped me feel a little bit more comfortable. Even if I met people that, you know, their views were just, you know, a little different than mine, you know, I could still use that language that I got from the CVC to maybe inform people and educate people about these things.
That's really amazing, Jaquan. Can you tell me about your high school experience? Was that a primarily white experience?
Yeah.
And so you kind of had that background, knowing what it's like to be a black man coming into a Green Bay, I mean, that's still really different than Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But we have the bubble of the campus here. So, yeah, I hear you describe yourself in different intersectionality ways. So can you kind of talk me through those intersections? Now that you've been thinking about that for a long time and your conversations with Kayla, I'm sure you guys talked about, yeah, the intersection of athlete, the intersection of student, like academic, like this career path, sociology, you know, you probably had this vague idea of where you were going to be, you know, 4 years from now or 5 years from now, but while you're here, you started tying all those pieces together.
Exactly.
So talk about your intersectionalities.
Yeah, well, again, a lot of my, one obvious one is I'm African-American and then also a male, so that's just, you know, two of the intersectionalities that I have. And then, you know, being an athlete, being a student. And then another one that a lot of people don't know about, they get super surprised, is that I'm adopted. So not only have I had experience with just being in predominantly white schools, but I've had the opportunity to live in, you know, a white household. And really, I think that's the intersectionality that really, like, you know, really shocks people the most. They're like, wow, you're adopted? I'm like, yeah. So actually, you know, having these I've had some of these conversations with my parents, and they're some of the smartest people that I think anybody will ever meet. And it's just interesting to get to hear my dad talk, my mom talk, and, you know, hearing, you know, what race is like for them coming from their perspective, living in, you know, we live in a pretty diverse community, and, you know, hearing their political views, it really, you know, shapes, like, who I am, because I came from a very, like, African-American household and family, and I went to a white African-American family, but the views are still pretty different, so when I put two and two together, I tell people who might, again, who may have different views other than mine, I go, hey, I have black family and I have a white family, and those two things sort of come together just fine. And so people who might see, you know, race or social justice issues a little bit differently, I go, hey, it actually can work. You know, I'm on two different sides of the spectrum, but yet I've learned a great deal about both sides of my family, which in turn has shaped me and put me here. And so this is what my experience that I have to offer you, and that's why I think my intersectionality is a little cool.
Yeah. So the Cassandra Voss Center gave you a chance maybe to explore that intersection?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you talk about the intersection between athletics and academics, too?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think... for being like a black male on campus, I will say, well, even for a lot of students, it's pretty hard to come in like freshman year and, you know, just be a really good student and be an athlete, even though like you've done it in high school. But I think around that, I think it's the college life that really you have a little bit more free time. And so I think the intersectionality between those two is just, you know, just finding like some type of common ground, because it could be, I know for me, it could be really, I think personally, and the statistics might show that, like, you know, African-American students might have a little bit harder time, you know, like, you know, adjusting to the curriculum, succeeding, especially like in their first year in college. So time management is always going to be key. So when you're thinking about being like a student athlete and being a student at a predominantly white campus, you get to, you know, when you're trying to find your footing, I think if you surround yourself with people, even if they don't look like you, that sort of know how to maneuver through these academics. So, for example, you probably know Alex and you know Akeem. So, and they were two African-American gentlemen that, you know, they graduated 2 years ago. And so I think finding people like that who can really, you know, give you advice on structuring your time, you know, being prompt at 6 a.m. practice, I think that really helped shape who I am and what I do on a day-to-day basis. Just seeing how like successful they've been, but at the same time, you know, bringing myself to everything that I have, bringing my thoughts, bringing my views to the classroom, bringing my energy, bringing just sort of my like athleticism to the team, and you know, just you know, really using that to really you know make a connection with my teammates.
Were Alex and Akeem the same class as you?
No, they were
mm-hmm. 2 years ahead.
Yeah, 2 years ahead.
So yeah. All of you were on both cross country team and the track team.
Yeah, except Akeem. Akeem was just on the track team.
So they played an important role for you as African American men on campus who were older than you, who were on the same team as you. Were you also all involved in the STAR program?
Yeah.
Can you talk about how Alex and Keem maybe played a role in your successful transition and what the STAR program was like?
Oh, yeah, because the STAR program, you know, you get people from all over the U.S. that come over here and they're from different, and they have different ethnicities. And I think Alex and Akeem and Tori, all of them very influential here on campus. And I think they've, if you heard me talking, then you hear like, you know, other minorities talk on campus, you might hear those three names pop up again and again because their energy, their knowledge, their wisdom. From the STAR program and even out of the STAR program, it really like just sets the tone. You get this feeling that, you know what, I'm here for a reason, regardless of the circumstances that I'm facing. We're here to change something. We're here to better ourselves. We're here to be a well-rounded students as a liberal arts education really tries to provide for you.
Yeah, that's really key. I think the STAR program also connected you with mentors or faculty or
mm-hmm.
staff. Can you talk about maybe someone who became a great mentor, staff, faculty resource for you?
Oh, yeah, Corey Shishelshuk.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Corey is awesome. And then, it's just not one person.
Mm-hmm.
You have Bridget Martin, mm-hmm. She's exceptional. The things that she's done as, you know, the overseer of the STAR program for the multicultural student services, what she's done has been incredible. But, she's so busy that sometimes I don't get to sit down and have, like, you know, dialogue with her, even though, like, I would love to. But someone I've seen on a day-to-day basis that has really helped me through my transition when I first became a STAR program, he wasn't there, but when I met Corey, he's also a minority faculty on campus, and he's done a lot of work in Milwaukee, and then he came here to St. Norbert, and it was nice to have an academic advisor that could sit down and say, hey, JQ, I know you have these circumstances around you, but you can't make excuses for that. You got to get this done, buddy. You got to do X, Y, and Z. And then even just talking about just – you know, each other's lives, where we're both from. Mm-hmm. It really was a big deal because when I started going to him, you know, I started, you know, paying attention, like, okay, you know what, I have insomnia, but I do have to get up and get up for class. I do have to go see Corey when I have a problem. I do have to communicate well. And so when you have people like Corey that I've met instilling those things in you on a day-to-day basis, you know, you take that along with you.
Oh, that's a great story. So you met Corey because he's working in the academic support program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know he's been to some STAR, or not STAR, but multicultural events and stuff too. So that's how I first found out he's going to be my advisor.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm picturing you coming in as a freshman. You're getting involved in the Connection or STAR program.
Yeah.
You're jumping right in. So that maybe was your first community, was
mm-hmm.
the multicultural community, and then your next community was the athletic community?
Yeah.
Then what other communities? Eventually you joined, like, with Sandra Voss in
mm-hmm.
that community. Can you tell me about other communities you felt really connected to?
Well, now I do Connections. That's a really...
Oh, you do?
Yeah, so that's a really good one for me. I mean, I've done other things. You know, I've been a part of... you know, the phone-a-thon, event staff, but, you know, I don't really, like, know people as well as I do, like, in my other communities, but, yeah, and then Umoja, this is another thing I didn't want to forget to talk about, because Umoja, that, you know, I think Dr. Delano and Dr. Mito, they do an exceptional job.
You gotta describe Umoja.
Okay.
That is a really amazing program.
Yeah, Umoja is a program for parents and families to come, parents specifically who've adopted minority children, and they really care about, you know, their kids, and they want to get to know their kids in the best way that they can. But if you haven't raised or really been around minority kids, then it might be a little bit of a challenge. And I don't mean, like, behavioral wise or anything like that, because you know, some kids are similar. Kids are really similar to each other, but I just mean culturally. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, I get my hair cut differently than white males get their hair cut. Black women get their hair cut or trimmed differently than, let's say, maybe white women get their hair cut. And so it might be hard for, like, a white family to sort of know about those things. And if, you know, black women say, oh, could you do my hair this way? And, you know, someone might be like, what? I don't know how to do that. So I think Emoja does a really great, fantastic job of educating parents on how to go about dealing with their minority child. They do a good job learning about the cultural aspects that come along with the multicultural child. And just in terms of how to help their families be a little bit more successful in terms
mm-hmm.
of those things.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find out about Emoja?
Again, through Dr. Delano and Dr. Mito. I know Akeem was an ed major.
Oh, Akeem.
So, yep,
okay.
Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, you know what you should do? And I was like, oh, what's up? And he's like, oh, you should come to Emoja for, you know, 2-3 days or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, for sure. I'd love to come. And so my first year there, I think I was a sophomore. I did it for 3 years. So it was like
awesome.
Yeah.
So it's just like a 2-day conference done in Appleton every year,
mm-hmm.
and they bring in people from all over the region.
Oh yeah.
To help families understand how to work together and appreciate different cultural aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Is it primarily African American kids or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then predominantly white
yeah.
parents. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Dr. Delano's been bringing her education students to this conference as part of their education program for many years. She's
mm-hmm.
she's quite a leader in the community.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big difference maker.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and on campus, too. Just always the person who seems to raise awareness and help us to keep moving forward on issues of diversity and
mm-hmm.
improving ourselves all the time. So yeah, thanks for sharing that story.
Yeah.
So, JQ, I'm really interested in your path now. So I understand you've decided to join Mercy Homes. Can you tell us a little bit about how that path came about? What drew you in that direction? And,
yeah.
and then tell us a little bit about what Mercy Home is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Mercy Home is a residential program for boys and girls. I work specifically on a boys' campus, and you know, they just offer you know, tools and resources for the youth of pretty much all ages. I think starting with maybe age 8 or 9, and then all the way up to about 22 years old. These are kids, you know, that might have had very traumatic childhood experiences, and some kids are different. Some kids just need an outlet to go and do the homework because maybe their families are really big and they don't have, you know, they don't get any time to really concentrate on their schoolwork and their household. Mercy Home really provides they provide great resources for kids. No matter what they go through to come in and try to be successful.
Yeah, so Mercy Home is in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and it's a nonprofit organization,
yep.
and it is a residential facility
mm-hmm.
and provides services non-residentially?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So people can just drop in? Is that?
Well, you have to apply.
Okay.
Like for, so if you're a family, and let's say you're a family with a child that, you know, is just struggling,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the household, or, you know, you're a family with whatever, you know, issues that you may have, if you're a family, you might want to come to a Mercy home and apply and say, you know, here's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my child isn't doing well academically. I'm a parent, you know, that I only have my high school education, and I would like someone, you know, I would like to see my child succeed, so I would like someone to be there for him, making sure he does his schoolwork, making sure he's getting it done and being efficient. And so Mercy Home provides great volunteers, great house parents or youth care workers, and school resource coordinators to really help their kids succeed, not just from that grade, but seeing them succeed through high school, all the way through. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so what drew you to that?
Yeah, for sure. So I've always been a big activist when it comes to mass incarceration. And a lot of my work and a lot of my studies have been around how do we solve the issue of mass incarceration. And at first, my idea was, you know what, I want to, you know, be a director of a program that, you know, would help ex-convicts, you know, go out into the world and, you know, make a difference and try to get some of their rights back in terms of housing, in terms of voting, and things that, you know, I think one day I can still be capable of, but I think now in my life, the best place for me to start is by start working with the youth, because mass incarceration is, as we all know, is, you know, it's a revolving door. And, you know, when we think about that, you think, well, how do you stop a revolving door, especially with, you know, adults who, you know, maybe 30 years old. I'm a 22-year-old. Sometimes I've thought about that. Like, it may be hard for me to, you know, tell someone what to do and where to go after they've had so many life experiences. And so I thought, you know what, working with the youth is the best place that I could probably start. I have brothers and sisters that are younger than me, and I do my best to see that they're being successful, that they succeed, and it's worked out well. So I thought, you know what, I want to help other kids do the same thing. I was not always a great kid, and so I think I can sort of share some of my knowledge on what it would take to get from point A to point B to point C. And a lot of kids say, you hear a lot of kids say, I want to go to Notre Dame, and I want to go to Penn State, and it's so exciting, and you're like, oh, that's the right attitude you have to have. You know, this is what you need to do. You need to harness some of that energy, you know, take, you know, a little bit of discipline, take a little bit of structure, and put it all together. And so when I started working at Mercy Home, I got to see, like, so many kids and what their experiences were, like, outside of Mercy Home, hear some of their stories, and then just hear some of their goals of what they might want in life. And I felt like I could really help them get there.
And you've been working there for a while?
Yeah, so I started a summer internship there. So that was my first experience at Mercy Home. I was a part of the academy. So they had a little summer enrichment program where they keep students' minds stimulated through different activities. And
little summer's fly, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Again, that's one of those things that I learned in my sociology of education class with Dr. Lynch about the gap between white students and black students.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of those things is the summer process where a lot of minority students don't keep up, you know, academically, so they don't retain a lot of that information that they have. So it was really cool to be a part of that because,
mm-hmm.
you know, kids have to get up early. You're trying to ask a 12-year-old to get up at 9 a.m. on, you know, July, whatever, and when it's super sunny, and, you know, come in the classroom and do some yoga exercises with JQ. And so, yeah, it's really fun. And so but it's really good to see them grow. And a lot of them, I got to know a lot of them, and they really grew from the start of the summer to the end of the summer when I was there. And I think some of the kids are, you know, still there and doing well. So,
yeah. So you went there last summer for the academy.
Yep.
And then you came back here this fall for, are you 3 classes or 4 classes?
Yeah, so I came back for another 4 classes. I really needed social research methods to round out my major. So, you know, I just, you know, I took social research methods and, you know, kind of threw some other sociology classes in there just to, you know, keep my mind on the sociology topics and stuff.
Yeah.
So, All right, so now, so then I had to go through the process of actual, I was just an intern, so then I had to actually, like, do the job application process. And so I ended up accepting a job there in late January.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What will be your position? Is it the same thing you did in the summer or something new?
Most likely. Actually, the fun part is that I have to do a one-year service program, a part of their Mercy Works program, where you actually, I'll be living there. So I'll be working there and living there, which is kind of cool. And so what that provides is they have many different aspects. They have values such as spirituality, professional development, that you can really like focus your attention on while you're there. And so throughout the year, I'll be focusing in on some of those values throughout my entire year there. And the cool thing is I don't know what my position will be. They don't tell you that. They want you to have an open mind before you get there, because you at Mercy Home, you could do many different things. And I think I was one of the first people to actually intern at Mercy and then do Mercy work. Like, usually people don't work there and then sign up for the program. Usually people just do the program, find out about what Mercy Home is like. So I already had a little bit of a background.
Mm-hmm.
So I know some of the positions that are available, and I just don't think it'll matter what I do.
You know, you could have probably had a wide choice of different places that would love to have you work there. So why Mercy Home?
I think Mercy Home is just a really incredible place, and it really means a lot to me, because I've had experience being in, like, a residential program, because I was also a part of a residential program when I was in high school. So when I was at Loyola Academy, I had a scholarship from Boys Hope, and they really, like, helped me get through high school. They provided a lot of the same services that Mercy Home does, except, you know, Mercy Home is for, you know, children. There's just, you know, they have many different experiences, and the same as Boys Hope, but Boys Hope is more of like a scholarship based thing. Like, I did well academically and I got into the program, but Mercy Home might be for students who maybe aren't doing well academically, and then they,
mm-hmm.
you know, find Mercy Home and, you know, for, you know, get better in that manner. But Mercy Home I think it means a lot to me, because it provides students with resources and tools, and it gives them experiences similar to what I had, that I had when I was a teenager/child. And I can say that I can really help students and give them advice. Like, I'm not just talking as like an outsider who, I'm 22 years old and I've been through college. Kids aren't going to listen to that. They want to know, like, wow, you were in a program just like this. You had to go through these things. Maybe I should listen to this guy, because at some point I'm going to want to make a change in my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I also see this thread of you are drawn to religious-based programs, faith-based programs.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Most of my life I've gone to Catholic schools, and while I'm not Catholic at all, I do think religion and I think spirituality really matters a lot in development. I would categorize myself as a very spiritual person, and a lot of times people, like, really, you know, they're like, oh, so what's the difference? And a lot of times, like, instead of just going to church, praying, and, you know, receiving the Eucharist, and, you know, going through, like, you know, the church system, I just, like, internally take time to myself. It might be a day like today where I would have gotten up and I wouldn't have done anything for maybe 30 minutes to an hour, and I would just sit and talk with God. Yeah, and so I think by doing that, you can really listen to, like, what sort of plans that, you know, you could talk about, and what sort of plans that might be in store for you, and how you can sort of make your day better, make your life better, how you can make a difference. And, you know, it's for, so for me, I want to make a difference in kids' lives, what that might look like, what are some of my goals, what challenges I might experience. And I think talking with God really helps me, you know, put it, everything into perspective for me.
That's pretty countercultural, J.Q.,
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
take time to contemplate, to reflect, to pray.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been able to stay focused on that, or how have you been able to make that a priority in your busy college life?
Oh, yeah, because, again, a lot of people would think, like, wow, you get to take, like, an hour, but, like, think about it, instead of napping, something that came up in your day, you might just want to take time to think about. Like, we all have things that, you know, go on in our lives. We have relationships with many different people. We have school. We have athletics. We have, again, many different intersectionalities. Some people might be a part of the LGBT community, and they might have an issue where someone came up to them and, you know, they use microaggressions towards them, and that makes people feel differently. If, you know, how someone treats me, I might take it differently than someone else. And so it matters, your time and what you do with it, it matters. So if you take time to sort of, I wouldn't say just get over it, but if you take time to really think about that and think about your actions, it can help you be a little bit more mindful about how you retaliate. It might make, help you be a little bit more mindful about when someone else has these experiences, how you end up talking to them and how you end up changing their lives. Because, again, some people are going to react differently to people doing different things. And I've had my challenges here on this campus, and by sitting back regularly and looking inward of my feelings and my thoughts and my actions, it helps me, you know, just think about my choices and think about my actions a little bit better, and that way I can, you know, be a little bit more, you know, thoughtful in how I go about my day and my life.
Yeah. I wonder about the legacy you're leaving here. You've contributed to many different parts of campus, and being such a thoughtful person makes a difference,
mm-hmm.
you know, in all the ways you work with faculty and other students. And now that you're a senior and you're graduating, what kind of legacy do you hope to leave here at St. Norbert?
I would say, you know, I really never thought about it just because I feel like so many people have so much more to offer. I guess the legacy I really want to leave is I want people to understand how, like, the realness of themselves and the realness that they can bring to campus. Like, a lot of times we get here, again, like I said, when I was a freshman, you know, I knew practically nothing. And, you know, you want to try to fit in here, you want to try to find your footing there. At the same time, when I was here over the course of 4 years, I found who I am as a person, and then in turn, I've met really great people. I met really great faculty, and I met really great. I remember my first conversation I had with you, and I was like, "Wow, this is someone who like really like cares." And we had our conversation at the CBC, and then like, you know, we see each other on campus, and then sometimes we would have time to really talk about like what's
mm-hmm.
going on in each
mm-hmm.
other's lives and,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I was like, you know what, I'm really, you know, talking to people like you, I'm talking to people like Corey and Bridget and my friends and my family. It really helped me, you know, realize who I was. And then in return, I think over the course of my 4 years, I was able to find a realness about myself that I can provide to campus. I can be culturally, I can be who I want to be. Like, I could bring different like slang terms to like campus, not inappropriately, obviously, but there are a lot of my white friends would be like, "Oh, well, what does that mean? What does that mean?" I could be like, "Oh yeah, that means that," but some people might, you know, try to focus on like, you know, being proper and not, you know, saying things that, you know, if you're from Milwaukee, some people in Milwaukee might not, you know, use the same type of terminology that they use it. But like, I actually like brought that to like campus, and I think a lot of other people have too. So that, and a lot of people are like, "Oh, well, I don't understand," but I think a lot of people might be like, "Oh yeah, I understand what that means. I understand what he means when you say that." So, and you know, just taking that and using that and you know, and seeing how other people, you know, sort of take on, like, different mannerisms that you might have to offer, and, you know, sort of your thoughts that you, you know.
Sounds like
cool.
Just in dialogue makes a big difference.
Yeah,
just talking to people,
helping
them to think differently, maybe, and challenging them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few minutes left to climb. So can you leave us with a challenge? So you're graduating, you've gotten to see the good, bad, and ugly of St. Norbert College. What would you hope would be different for someone coming in now? How could the college make this an even better place, especially for students of color, to be safe, be grow, be challenging, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What can you challenge the college here?
Honestly, that's a really good question, because I just had a meeting with Dr. Kim about some of these issues, and personally, I think a challenge might be, so one of the things that Dr. Kim and the group that I was with, we talked about, it'll be hard to change things systematically, like St. Norbert is a system, which is, I thought, a really good point that Dr. Kim made, like, yeah, we can't, you know, what can we do now, was what she tried to focus our attentions on. So since we want to try to focus on what we can do now, St. Norbert has a system where students can get involved, and a lot of times students get involved in different ways, and because this is a predominantly white campus, a lot of people might get involved with people and, you know, staff that are similar to them, that look like them, but expanding on our involvement, like STAR is really for multicultural students, but I remember when I got here freshman year, I had a lot of my track friends, like, oh, like, can we come to some of these events, and can we do X, Y, Z? It's like, yeah, sure, we'd love to sit down and have you be a part of it, and, you know, because, you know, I might see you around campus, and I might be with some of the multicultural students, and, you know, you don't want anyone to feel comfortable, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be with the multicultural students. Like, no, it's perfectly fine if you come, and in return, like, if you're a minority student on campus, and you see, say a fraternity or sorority, and, you know, they're predominantly white, you know, and be like, oh, well, you know, should I say hi to that person in that group? People think I'm like, no, you shouldn't, no one should have to feel like that. So expanding on those programs, I think, would be a really wonderful way that St. Norbert could really start. And again, dialogue comes with that as well. Like, when you expand these programs, you also want to make sure that you provide a sort of teaching curriculum for not just students, let's say coaches, again, teachers, just regular staff. You know, you want to provide those things. You want to provide some type of training when you expand on these programs to sort of let people know, hey, you're going to have some people from Milwaukee, and they're going to, again, like I said, expanding on the realness. You're going to have some people from Milwaukee. You're going to have some people from Chicago. You're going to have some people from Louisiana that you might not understand their dialogue. And so if they're talking, you know, you don't go up to someone and saying, you know, I thought this person was being inappropriate because of the way that they talk, and this person made me feel. No, that's how some people, how would you feel if someone came up to you and said, I didn't really feel comfortable around that person because of how they were talking. You know, that's not right. So when we expand on these programs, we want to make sure that we provide a really effective training system that really helps coaches, staff, students really get to know each other more, and so that we can feel comfortable with saying hi to people on campus, because I was really the only black person in my grade, like predominantly African-American person in my grade, and sometimes I would get, like, you know, other minority students that I hadn't seen, and, you know, it might be a little awkward, like, going. So, you know, you want to feel comfortable with saying hi to, like, pretty much many different people on campus.
JQ, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being who you are, for all the contributions you've made, the dialogue you've had, the challenges you've overcome, your resiliency, your persistence,
mm-hmm.
and graduating this spring. That's really a great accomplishment, and now off into the world, you're going to do great things at Mercy Home and help a lot of people because of the intersections you've made. I think you're going to help build bridges, and I'm so proud of what you've done, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you again for having me do this and bringing me in. And I hope that our conversation helps other students, and I hope it makes sense.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.